Hello and welcome to Echoes of Glory, Season 8, Episode 23. I'm Jack.
Abbas.
Gareth.
Gareth, well, there's a familiar voice.
When was
the last time you were on?
It was October 2017, I think.
Here we go. Instead of a We Are Tottenham Hotspur quiz, we should do a We Are Gareth quiz, shouldn't we? There we go.
It's only last season.
Oh, technically, yeah.
Yeah.
What were the results of October 2017?
I mean, you could have given me a little bit of... heads up that you were going to ask that and I'd have prepped something. That's not the opening question today. The opening question actually is, who's the most two-footed player you've ever seen? Now, this came from watching Son over the last few weeks. Like, the way he strikes the ball with his right foot and his left foot. Like, as a defender, you must think, God, what way can I actually show him? Because he strikes the ball as cleanly on the left as he does the right. So, who's the most two-footed player you've ever seen?
It's a good question. I've done no prep whatsoever.
Brilliant.
Ronaldo comes to mind.
Cristiano.
And I guess Messi as well, to an extent. Yeah.
Brilliant. So you literally have done no prep. Well, Gareth, I'm going to hope that you've done a little bit more.
Well, I've had a little look and a think about it. Andy Bramer, I remember being pretty two-footed. And then Paolo Maldini as well.
Perfect.
Because they're both left-backs who...
Yeah.
You'd never really think of them as being purely left-footed. You know, they weren't just stuck out there because they're the only left-footed players in the team. Because I think Bramer scored his pen in the 1990 World Cup final with his right foot.
Now, excuse my ignorance.
And mine.
Andy, I genuinely have no idea who Andy Bramer is.
He did score a winning goal in a World Cup final.
That's shocking.
He also took the free kick in that Turin semi-final that was deflected over Peter Shilton as well.
So I assume he's German.
Yeah, he is German. Yeah.
I mean, there you go.
He was part of the three players with Matthäus and Klinsmann that was at Inter, I think, in the late 80s, early 90s.
Well, there you go. You know, Maldini was one, actually, because I put this out on social media as well, that came up quite a few times. Quality with both feet. Glenn Hoddle was one as well.
Got Hoddle on the list.
Have you? Professor Chornick on Reddit says Glenn Hoddle and Brazilian Ronaldo as well, so the proper Ronaldo.
Well, I've got Kane as well. I mean, the strike against the Wolves.
Yes.
I mean, that was left-footed, and you watch that and it's difficult to tell that he was actually a right-footed player.
I think always about left-footed shots as well. They always look better. Do you know what I mean? If someone scores a left-footed volley, you think, oh, it just looks so much better than a right-footed one. It's a bit
especially
weird.
If it's Zidane and it's off his wrong foot.
Oh, well. In a Champions League final. It's not a bad player.
Is that the greatest ever Champions League final goal? Or does Bale beat it?
I mean, I think Bale's is as good, but I don't know. There's just something about that Zidane one.
I'm going to go out and say it was Bale's goal was better than Zidane's. Do you know why? Against Liverpool.
Yeah, so it gives it an extra point, doesn't it? Some other players that came up on Reddit, so 96 Spurs, he said Ousmane Dembele, he takes corners with either foot.
That's impressive.
Didn't know he did that. That's ridiculous.
If you could do that, that's good. I mean, Bobby Charlton was always the original, and if Stats over here would probably be saying that he actually did see him play, but he was one that was often incorrectly thought of as being left-footed because so many of his goals were that good.
Obafemi Martins, who's one of your favourites, he used to take penalties with both feet, didn't he? He's taking some of his left, some of his right.
I just remember his absolute
screamer.
Considering it's one of those things that you normally make a point of a player being so one-footed, and everyone's quick to say, it's the job, think how much they get paid, they should be able to fundamentally kick the ball with both feet. Especially when you think that some baseball players are equally adept swinging the ball either right or left-handed. I mean, I was terrible at kicking the ball with my other foot.
Yeah. Well, you look at, like, I mean, we digress away from football, but even something like cricket where you've got someone like, or you had someone like Kevin Peterson who could very easily switch hit.
Yeah. Ridiculous technique as well.
Unbelievable technique where it was, you know, he could literally change the way he was batting. And, you know, like, hook it for six.
Yeah, effortlessly as well.
Yeah.
That was the thing. Yeah, unbelievable player. Diego Forlan came up a couple of times. So it's not one that springs to mind with me, but Fozzy138 says on Reddit, can't believe Diego Forlan hasn't been mentioned yet. I don't necessarily remember Forlan being both-footed, but maybe that's just me.
No. I think it's one of those things you often take for granted with players when they do it. And you don't notice it because it happens so naturally, but if they are so one-footed and they're constantly trying to put the ball onto their stronger foot, like someone like Moussa Dembélé for Spurs. Every time he receives the ball, he's constantly trying to turn, whether he goes around in a full 360 or not, to, just to have it there on his left foot and ready. And well, if you're good and you're big and you're strong, and someone like Messi as well, I mean, I think statistically he probably does favour his left a little bit more than his right, but you almost don't notice it because they're so adept at playing to that strength.
The other Spurs player was Tom Huddleston. Both feet, you know, the way he used to strike a ball was really he's probably the cleanest striker of a ball I think I've seen playing for Spurs. Left foot, right foot. I remember he was going an absolute screamer against Arsenal in a 3-3 home draw.
Oh, brilliant.
Fell to just outside the box, left foot, bang. Cut, yeah.
Don't think he ever hit it above about a foot off the ground.
Yeah.
I think Scholes was quite good, 2 foot.
Yeah. He weren't bad, Scholes. Well. Do you remember Tommy Huddleston's goal away to Man City as well?
Yes.
It was a volley.
It was a half volley.
Really weird, half volley, but it's a really weird angle because the ball's like above waist height and he manages to get over it and fizz it in from about 25 yards. If you've not seen that, check that on YouTube. Tom Huddleston volley versus Man City. Ridiculous technique.
Think when I came 2-0.
But that was when City were
terrible.
Absolutely nowhere. So yes, there we go. Most two-footed players we've ever seen. We've got the Newcastle game to talk about.
Yeah.
So we won 1-0. Fantastic result. You know, again, given the injuries. I was quite surprised to see Llorente on the bench. I don't know what you thought when the teams came out.
I was surprised with Llorente on the bench just because of the impact he had towards the end of the Watford game. And I don't know what it is, but the first 45 minutes we absolutely bombarded them with balls into the box, and then after 60 minutes Llorente comes on and we maybe put 3 or 4 up there.
Let's talk about that header actually against Watford then, before we go into the Newcastle game. Unbelievable finish. Like, for me, that was Kane-esque against Arsenal. Like, the way that came in, he just smashes the defender out of the way, heads it back across the face of goal, keeper's got no chance. Absolutely brilliant goal. You know, really, really late goal in the game. He'd had that horrible miss as well.
Especially considering the misses, that's a key thing.
And that one he put over the bar from 2 yards, you just think...
Well, that was just poor when you look at it as well, off his knee. You don't know if he was trying to improvise and just get any sort of contact on, or if he was actually trying to swing the boot at it instead. But yeah, it never looked good looking back
at
it.
Credit to him, in his last 2 games he's got 2 goals and an assist,
and they've been
a goal and 2 assists.
They've been massive moments as well, you know. Like the goal against Watford, it's not as if we're winning 4-0 and he does a Darren Bent and comes on and gets the 5th, you know. He's not that, he hasn't been that kind of player for us. He's actually been contributing in massive moments, getting knockdowns. It might not have been pretty, even the Sun goal against Watford, it wasn't the nicest layoff,
kind of, but just like came off him. He was there, he was in the right place, and he was pushing defenders away.
And you know what? Defences seem to panic with Llorente. Like, he comes on and all of a sudden teams just drop to the edge of their own box and they just, we can hit long balls up to him. He's fantastic at knocking it down.
His
hold-up play is really, really good. Probably quite underrated, actually. And when we've got bodies around him, we've actually looked pretty dangerous playing that way.
Well, I did say, I think, when Kane got injured that in our little WhatsApp group, that this was now a time for Llorente to step up, and him playing up front with runners off him, or him knocking it down to like Moura or Son would work. And in the last 2 games it has.
Yeah. And you know what I've liked about it this season is, last year I wasn't a massive Llorente fan. I thought he was quite ineffective, partly because when he was coming on he wasn't doing a lot, but I didn't feel like last year we were really playing to his strengths. When he was on, we weren't being direct. Whereas I feel like this season we've not been afraid, especially in games when he's come on late, to just put it up to him. Well, I quite like that.
In the past, there was always a plan B. If it's not working with Kane, you bring him on and he offers something different. But for the last few games, he's had to be plan A.
Yeah.
So the team has had to adapt. But I don't think we should get too far from the hard fact, which is he's just filling in. You know, he does offer something a little bit different. But I think a lot of people, even if Kane is fully fit and it's 0-0 with 5 minutes to go, would still rather see Kane on the pitch with the ball at his feet and having a go than bringing on Llorente instead of him. I know that's unlikely to happen, and it's probably as well as, but I think the reality is that if we can get away with accumulating as many points as we can, and Llorente is weighing in with a couple of goals. Yeah. It just shows that we have got more of a squad. It's not just Spurs have got one of the best 9-11s in the league, which they certainly have, but they've also got some options. But
yeah,
it's not the same as Jesus coming on for Aguero, though, is it?
Not quite. I know which one of the two I'd rather have.
I think the Leicester game on Sunday, team selection, we'll come on to it, but the team selection for that would be important, because you've got a solid centre half in Harry Maguire, who is very much no nonsense.
Yeah.
And I don't see how, if we're playing the likes of Moura, Son, and Lamella as an interchangeable front three with Eriksen, if we're going to get, we need some more like physicality up there, I think.
It's an interesting point, actually, and I think that was probably the main reason why for Newcastle he didn't play him, because Newcastle have got three big centre halves that like balls in the air, and you know that's their bread and butter, really. So Potts has obviously looked at that and gone, right, actually I'm going to go with Lucas Son Eriksen, and we're not going to hit it long, we're going to try and get in behind them and draw them out to cause them problems that way. So I get your point. There's two ways of looking at it, really, isn't there? Do you do that because the opposition have got big centre halves, so do you go with your big striker, or do you say, actually we know you being 6'4" and 15 stone, you're not going to be the quickest, so we'll put a pacey striker up there. It's an interesting one.
Well, with the players that we've got, certainly in the front third, there's no reason why we shouldn't be scoring more goals like Man City. You know, get to the byline and then someone just knocks it in from the 6-yard box.
It's the same goal every week,
yeah,
isn't it?
And anyone can be doing that. Llorente is more than capable of getting in amongst defenders. He knows which runs to make. He knows how to make space for himself. He knows how to make a nuisance of himself. And there's no reason why he shouldn't be in the end of those. I think what's kind of strange that I've never seen Tottenham put in quite so many crosses into the box, especially through Vertonghen playing wide out on the left.
He was brilliant at left back.
Oh yeah, he was. He was playing really well. I know he played for Belgium there a lot, didn't he? He always seemed to play left back for them. But I've never seen us put in that volume of crosses, even when Danny Rose, somebody who's supposed to be more of a provider, with the ball at his feet, even with him playing there. So it was unusual, especially when, like you say, there wasn't a big target man there in the middle. Maybe the idea is that you break down the play a little bit more, and it's all about retrieving the ball once their defenders have had the chance to head it back.
Yeah.
So it's about that secondary possession at the edge of the box when it's been defended, and making sure you've got the players there to retrieve it, and you play from there. Not a massive tactician, but that could be.
But you know what? I loved Vertonghen when he plays at left back. I know it's not his position, but he's so attack minded, and it's weird. You know, you put in a centre half there,
and he can put in a good ball as well.
He's nonsense with it. He takes a touch, he whips it in. He knows he's not the quickest, so he's not going to try and dribble past. But puts it in a dangerous area. I mean, he's a fantastic centre back. How does he measure up with versus not other centre backs that you've seen at Spurs over the years?
Well, I always think the Richard Gough and Gary Mabbott tandem in 86-87 was the best one. Sadly, you never got to see Gough more than that in that season, which was a real shame. But I've seen a lot of pretty average centre-backs in centre.
Most average?
Well, some of those combinations with Mabbott in the 90s, when it was people like Nethercott filling in for him, Calderwood, I mean, he was a bit of a... Calderwood was reliable, but he's not Franco Baresi. And I don't think
he's ever been compared to him either.
No, and I think we've got to be well aware that what we're watching now in terms of the quality in these key positions, certainly of our starting 11, it's not since the 60s that really we've been able to claim this strength throughout our team.
Is it the best side and the best squad that you've seen since being a Spurs fan?
Oh, undoubtedly. Yeah, that 86-87 team was good, but the league was a very different kettle of fish then. Tottenham were a big club able to compete with wages in the same way that, you know, compared to other teams, because the bubble hadn't completely exploded at that point. So Tottenham was seen as a big team, and they could sign pretty much anyone they wanted because they had the same sort of pull. To build a squad of the quality that Spurs have now, is an incredible achievement, mm-hmm. considering what they're competing against in terms of resources.
Yeah.
And I know it's been mentioned about not making any additional signings, and that whenever we lose, that's something that the media like flagging up. But I think retaining the players in our squad over the summer was such a major thing, because anyone can wave a chequebook now. And well, I say anyone. There's three or four clubs that don't care about actually giving key players first team opportunities. They can stockpile talent just to prevent other teams from having them, really.
Yeah, Chelsea.
Yeah. And so the team they've built now is astonishing in that regard, yeah.
I do feel as if, I mean, I feel like next summer is a massive moment in the recent history of Tottenham. Just in the sense that, you know, there's a few players whose contracts are up in the air. So you've got Vertonghen's had a year extension. Do we then give him another year after that? I'd probably say yes.
The way he's playing, give him another 10, isn't it? Yeah.
Look at Toby. I mean, the definition of an elite centre back is Toby. Everyone's talking about Van Dijk, and, you know, yeah, great, good, brilliant, but Toby's in that sense. Should be mentioned in those sentences.
I think there's a case for Toby to be the greatest centre back that's ever played for Spurs. I really do, and I think the greatest centre half I've seen is Ledley. But if you were to have to pick one or the other, just based on games, he's never injured, is he? Doesn't pick up the niggly hamstrings or any sort.
I mean, he had one.
He had one
last year.
But you know, in the grand scheme of his whole Spurs career, he's just an astonishing player.
Some injuries, of course, and yeah, he's been really strong. And the thing about Van Dijk is, that's 75 million and whatever money he's on is the benchmark, because Toby and his agent will know that that's what he should be getting. And we talk about a transfer market again for Spurs. You definitely need to instill competition in your squad to get people to play for their shirt each week.
Yeah.
But at the same time, for a team like Tottenham and a club like Tottenham, is instead of investing 50 million on a couple of players which may or may not work out, bearing in mind that we can't really afford them to be flops, even at that sort of money, is that 50 million better spent paying superstar wages to our superstar players?
Which I probably would say would be the way forward. It would be to ensure that the players like Vertonghen, Eriksen, who's been quite poor recently, but Eriksen, Vertonghen, Toby are suitably compensated. And then our model has always been signing players who, like, you know, like championship level slash
League
One with potential, never buying like the Iscos of this world or, you know, like the Agueros of this world. We're never going to compete. So you look at, like, you know, the youngsters, like someone like Sancho, Man City, and you buy these players and build them up rather than buying the 50, 60 million pound players. So then naturally you buy a player who's fit 10, 15 million as opposed to a 55, 65 million pound player. And that surplus of that money can essentially be spent on wages, like ensuring that the rest of the squad are happy.
There's obviously decent incentives in place in this Spurs team as well, in that if you do hang around and you play well, you'll get rewarded. And I suppose there's still a balance at the moment that if you decided, like Kyle Walker, rightly or wrongly, you can get paid twice as much and you can go be transitioned into a team that is immediately going to compete for four trophies and probably win at least one of those in any given season. Now, there's not the same guarantee at Tottenham, because they still have to react and work with this potential exodus of players. See, I have no doubt that if the team stays together and they're lucky with injuries and maybe get a little bit more depth, and I don't mean superstars, just somebody that can come in and do a job or someone is injured, then they will win trophies. And if that's what matters to players, Spurs can do that while still paying them a very good wage. It's whether or not some of these players will be happier with the pay packet and playing a peripheral role in a big squad that is definitely going to win medals. Yeah. I mean, it's all about priorities, yeah. And now they want to focus on it.
That's a good point. And what's success for you? Because I know there's always the constant debate of, do you want the FA Cup or do you want top four? And I've said time and time again, you can have both. We're at the point now we can have both. But what's success for you? Is finishing third or fourth this season a success, or should we have prioritised the cups? Where's your stance on it all?
The romantic in me is always, you'd love a day at Wembley and to win a cup. And of course, that goes in the trophy cabinet and it stays there forever. In the Panini album, it'll say we won it in next year. And as a kid, it's those years and those dates when we win trophies, that's what you remember. But the game is very different now. And it is measured in top four finishes just as much as cups. And Tottenham won't recruit players next summer by saying, come and play for us. We'll be in the Champions League next season with you on our books, but come and play for the FA Cup winners. Mm. That's not going to work for us. It might work for some other clubs that finish sixth. You know, it might work for Man United saying that they can do it.
Yeah.
But it doesn't work for Tottenham. We have to give them that tangible thing straight away. And they don't care if we won the FA Cup last year. They want to know that we can be competing for it this year. But they want to be playing on Tuesdays and Wednesday nights, hearing that anthem under the lights.
Yeah.
That's what we have to sell them. And I don't know if that's good, but I definitely think that is right.
Do you think it's just the way football has now gone, where not just with Spurs, but you see a lot of teams around in and around the top six prioritising getting European football, and there's been, like, you know, the emphasis of a cup now isn't so important. It's more so for the players than it is for the... Sorry, it's more for the fans than it is for the players.
I would definitely agree with that. And I think just from a pure... the way football's run now, it's run as a business, a lot of sides. And if you think from a financial point of view, you don't win a huge amount for winning the FA Cup. And we mentioned it on the pod a few weeks ago.
7 million.
7 million.
Yeah.
I bet finishing eighth in the Premier League gets you significantly more than that. So actually, I always scratch my head, especially at teams like Leicester and West Ham, who rotated their sides in the FA Cup a few weeks ago. They're not going to get relegated. So you think, go all out for that cup. They rotate their sides and then they get knocked out. But actually, if you're talking purely from a financial point of view, they're going to benefit a lot more finishing seventh or eighth than they are winning the cup. Whether or not that's right or wrong, that's a separate question. But I think that's the aim of a lot of the owners now. There aren't as many British owners in it anymore. So I don't think that the FA Cup, in particular the FA Cup, has got as much meaning to it anymore as what it used to have.
Yeah.
You used the word romantic, and I think for supporters, definitely, we all want that day at Wembley. And when you put your heart aside for a minute, you can see the long-term benefits of finishing the Champions League. My argument with Spurs now is that we're good enough, and even with our injuries, we've got a good enough squad where we can be doing both.
I don't think
we have to pick or choose.
I think
there are sides that do still have to pick and choose, and that's where you get a lot of questions asked.
I just think, and I guess I mentioned it last week, where I guess one of the most, like, from tangible point of view and from from a fan point of view, it's nice to have, say, look, we've won the FA Cup, won this, we've won that. You look at someone like Arsenal who have been bog standard in the last 6 or 7 years, they've still managed to pick up 3 FA Cups. And
that winning mentality that a trophy brings?
Yeah, because as I said last week, winning breeds winning. So you have a winning mentality brings on another more winning mentality, and you go from the FA Cup. So you start off with the Carling Cup goes to the FA Cup. Once you've done the FA Cup, you look at what else can we do domestically. Okay, the Premier League. Okay, you've done that. Now what's next? The Champions League. You know, you can't just go. It's
quite rare you just win the league from out of nowhere, unless you're like a Leicester and you have a freak.
Yeah, but if you look at, like, what's been going on in recent history in the last 10-15 years, teams that have won, with the exception of Liverpool, teams that have won the FA Cup have also probably won the league in recent memory.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a fair point. I mean, Gareth, you're a Spurs fan, over the years suffered quite a lot with really bog-standard sides. So what do you say to Spurs fans at the minute that are moaning about either the style of play or that we're not quite getting over the line in cup competitions? What's your view on all of that?
It's because we've been spoiled, and people who are relatively new to it, quite rightly, have got high expectations, because the last four or five seasons, well, maybe even the last seven or eight seasons, if you think back to sort of 09-10, they've become used to Tottenham being really competitive at that top table of teams, and they're as consistent over those last few years as any side, really. I would say that there is a justifiable criticism for Tottenham seemingly having this mental block, especially in FA Cup semi-finals. Mm-hmm. We've played in something like four in the last 10 years, and even when we've been favoured to win them, we've not managed to get over the line. And that is suitably frustrating. But I've always said, and I remember saying it, the year when we beat Chelsea, was it 5-2 on New Year's Day? And everyone was raving about that, saying, oh, it's brilliant to beat Chelsea. And I thought, yeah, it's great competing on in one game, but I want to compete over 38. And that's what we're now doing. So I'm inclined to come a little bit of slack over the cup competitions, just because I think if you go on a bit of a run, you get to a point in them and you think, yeah, we go for them now. And we were really unlucky with the League Cup that it came at a time when the squad was threadbare. We were really up against it. We did a fantastic job to actually be in that tie and take it to penalties anyway. And to for even Spurs fans and non-Spurs fans to say, oh, Tottenham bottled another semi-final, I don't buy that criticism. They were in a semi-final. They went that far in that competition. Maybe the way that they went out against Palace was a little bit more disappointing because there were some fundamental errors that were made on the day.
Especially with the League Cup, you look at the sort of games we had. We had West Ham away, we had Arsenal away. And we basically had four London derbies. We had Watford in essentially not even a home game. West Ham away, Arsenal away.
Yeah, compared to Man City, who were playing... Well, everyone
and managed to beat Chelsea at home. So we've beaten Chelsea, Arsenal, and West Ham in our League Cup run. It's a great run. I mean, that's not celebrating failure, but it's not actually saying that we've actually done quite well.
But the thing, you would have got just the amount of criticism if they'd have played a slightly weakened side, which they probably did for the West Ham game, in terms of a League 11, it wasn't a full strength 11. If they'd have lost that, they would have got just as much criticism, but it would have been a few months ago and everyone would have forgotten all about it. The fact is, they got to a semi-final. I mean, Liverpool, they're competing for the league or whatever, but they also made a conscious decision that they weren't going to go for those cups. And they might have got criticised afterwards, but it's all long forgotten where down the line they've achieved their other objective. And I think for Tottenham, it has to be this league position. And of course, it would have been a very different perspective if we hadn't come back and beaten Watford immediately after the Palace game. And it'd be exactly the same if we hadn't been in Newcastle on Saturday. Mm-hmm. But when you set your stall out of what your priority is, and it has to be the league, I think you've got to back it up, and they're at least doing it.
Well, one of the things I don't get, never have got, is the lack of criticism that Klopp and Liverpool get. So if you look at someone like Klopp and Liverpool, right?
Not from you, obviously.
No, I've never.
Do you Liverpool?
I never said a bad word against them. Don't know what you're talking about. But essentially, in the same place as Spurs, they've essentially in. If you look at like how much money they've spent net spend. About £250 million more than Spurs in Klopp's reign alone. And what have they got to show for it? One Carling Cup final and a Champions League final. They finished below us for nine seasons out of the last ten. And I just don't see the same criticism being angled at Klopp than it is at Poch.
Yeah, I mean, I think Liverpool fans would probably say the same on the reverse, that they would say, oh, we get loads of stick, but maybe Spurs don't. But what I think Liverpool is a prime example of is, even with all that money being thrown at a team, it's not guaranteed anything. Obviously, it helps, but like you said, if City catch them in the league, they're going to likely end this season with no trophies.
Yeah.
And that could, in theory, be absolutely, you know, the same as us. So it's a really difficult one. I get the point about Liverpool. There does feel like that there's a bit of a media agenda in their favour. But you know what? I think that's just one of them things we've just got to deal with. As Spurs fans, we're hated massively now by all of the other sides. And that's a good thing. Like, we used to be such an irrelevant team. 10, 15 years ago, people wouldn't even talk about us. Now they hate us and they give a stick when we lose a game. That we should see that as a good thing, because we're a threat to a lot of these sides now.
Yeah, no, that's true.
It is amazing what a bit of investment can do for a squad. You look at Liverpool, where last year they finished fourth, and you know, what, it wasn't a comfortable fourth place finish, but they've made, in 1 year or in like half a season, they've made leaps and bounds. Mm. In terms of improvement.
But they also showed, though, what you can do with the investment in the right place. You know, they got 170 million for Coutinho, or 180 million, or whatever it was, and they identified what they needed to get into their squad. And I remember at the time, some Liverpool fan mates of mine were bemoaning the fact that Coutinho was going to go, how can we compete if we're still in our best player? Well, you don't actually need him. When you look at your squad depth, you do need shoring up elsewhere, and they've gone and done that, and perhaps shows that while I think the tactic that we showed when we sold Bale in 2013 was the right way of going about it, it just shows that they didn't necessarily isolate where they needed that investment to go with that Bale money, and maybe that did set us back a season or two in our development.
Yeah. So if someone comes in the summer with 180 million for Ericsson, what are you saying there?
You take it.
Yeah, I think you've got to take it. But it's got to be that sort of money as well, though. That's the thing, because for Spurs, Ericsson, and there's no point in us then spending 150 million on one other player, because that isn't necessarily how Spurs will replace him.
But then my problem is, will we necessarily replace him at all?
Just pocket the money.
Our skip to do another job.
Yeah, yeah.
You know,
and
that's the problem. Yeah. I think that's the problem we see, where the money, the Coutinho money, was thoroughly reinvested back in within the squad, with some added on top of that. Mm-hmm. But with Ericsson, you sell him for 180 million, you get someone who's like, you know, still in like the League One/Championship mold.
Yeah, get like Bradley Dack from Blackburn or something.
For like 25 million, or like a Jack Grealish, and be like, look, here you go, and then pocket 150. That's not necessarily reinvesting in the squad as you should do.
But you've got to trust the scouting network, you've got to trust the manager to identify targets.
Yeah.
And it may even be that we could have a dearth of talent in the Ericsson role. It might not be him individually as a player, but you might think, actually, we've got enough players there that can be incisive, can hit a dead ball, can be creative with a pass, but we actually need an out-and-out striker to be on the end of it, because that is a secondary aspect that we haven't got in the squad at the moment. So where do you put the money? That's why you've got to rely on the scouts to do that properly as well, because I don't know who an out-and-out striker is that fits the mould for what we want.
Yeah, it's a difficult one. Let's talk about the Leicester game.
Yeah, just before the Leicester game, I just want to say that Lamella in the last couple of weeks he's not really been the Lamella that he was maybe a couple of months ago. Do you reckon he's carrying an injury? Do you reckon he's...
I don't know. You know what? I think he's one of these players, Lamella. He always divides opinion with Spurs fans. He's a love or hate kind of player. I think he's done all right in the games the last three or four. He's a player that will always take a risk, and some games that comes off 70% and you think, wow, what a player, and then other games it doesn't come off at all. But he's never one that will just give the easy pass. It can be infuriating as a fan to watch him sometimes, because you think you could have just played it there and we'd have kept the ball. But he doesn't see the game like that. He sees the game as, I need to take risks when I'm in possession, because if that comes off, we've got a greater chance of scoring. You can never question the guy's energy and his work rate. No. Like that's unquestionable. It's just his decision making, especially in the final third, the consistency of it.
He's obviously got license to do that, though, hasn't he? And I suppose it depends as well with the team setup of how, which other players are around him and what Pochettino said to him, saying, if you see that pass, try and make it. If it comes off, brilliant. And the players around him will know what he's doing and be backing him up as well. But I take your point that he's not been the star man of it.
But you look at someone like Son, who revels in it. You can see that Son absolutely loves being the guy. And I think maybe Lamela sometimes finds that potentially quite intimidating. Mm.
I still think with Lamela, and I've sort of said this to him from day one, I like him in central positions on the pitch. Often he plays wide, and I don't think that suits him as much. He's got great feet, but he's not necessarily got the pace and the desire to go past him. I know when Son picks it up and he's out on the wing, and he just roasts the fullback, goes past him like he's not there. Lamela's not necessarily that kind of player. I like him when he's picking up central areas between the lines and he's driving at the back four. That's when I think he's at his most dangerous. But I don't know, my opinion changes daily on Lamela. Like, at the minute I'm like, you know what, I think he's a decent player, he's good for us. Tomorrow you ask me, I'll say, you know what, take the cash. I really do fluctuate a lot with him. He's one of those players for me.
You can see quite a few of the players in the squad, how they act for Tottenham is almost directly a correlation to how they perform for their national team as well. Because pick someone like Son, he is by far South Korea's
he's a god.
Best player.
Yeah.
He's their absolute superstar. So when he comes back to Spurs and he's got some decent players around him as well, he, as you correctly say, doesn't mind being the focus of attention and having the burden on him. Lamela, Argentinian, he's got so many other attacking players that he's competing with in the squad. He's to shout above that clutter of voices must be really difficult for him. Ericsson, he's the absolute superstar for Denmark, and he plays really good for us as well.
I think that's a really good point. Leicester at the weekend at home, dangerous game for me.
Very
Leicester.
Dangerous game.
They're not a particularly great side, but just the pace that they have on the break with Vardy and Gray.
They're very hit and miss, aren't they?
Yeah.
They've had a few games where, you know, the Liverpool game was a great result. They were
beating Chelsea, beating Man City.
Yeah, and they were actually really unlucky against United yesterday, where they probably should have got a point. And, you know, they've caused us problems.
You always got to be nervous with Vardy, just because he's not a particularly great player, but he just doesn't give you a second, and you're always worrying, is he just going to... And you know how we play out from the back? You just think there's always that chance that he's just going to nick one of them. So I think we've got to be careful. Don't get me wrong, we're a much better side than Leicester, but we do have to be wary of Vardy, because it actually feels like he's got quite a good scoring record against us. I don't know if he has, but it feels like he scores quite a lot of the time against us whenever we play them.
Well, I think the game will be quite similar to the first game at the King Power. We won that game 2-0 with Dele and Son.
Yeah, Dele scored like an identical goal, wasn't it?
But that's his first one.
I remember in that game, for the first 15-20 minutes, Leicester came on strong, and we got a goal just before half time. That sort of changed the game slightly. Yeah. But they're always a threat. You look at last season when they finished 5-4, which was a crazy
game. What a game,
game
that was. We were 3-1 down in that game.
We were 3-1 down,
right?
And came up 4-3, and then Vardy got fourth and then came and scored the...
Lamela got a couple in that game, though.
He
didn't
did.
He
did. But you look at that, and you can see that they had pace in that game. They had Vardy, they had Iheanacho, they had Damari Gray playing. So they've got pace, they've got players that can actually hurt us. They've got decent players. Quite excited to see how Youri Tielemans gets on. Would actually like to see him play some part of that game. Because he is a player who I've sort of followed through Monaco and through the Belgian national team based on a Football Manager. So it would be nice to see it, like, if he is as good in person as you see him on TV.
Do you think we'll get the job done, though?
It'll be close. Odd goal. If we do win, it'll be the odd goal.
I think the key comes down to us taking the opportunities. I think we're going to make opportunities, and what we don't want is another... Even though we've got a great record the last three games, scoring in 80-plus minutes, what I don't want is to be in a situation where we're still scrabbling around for something with only 10 minutes to go, because, as mentioned, Leicester are great at counter-attacking. They've got a lot of pace, and they can soak up pressure
and hit us in the break.
And if we can get in amongst them early, one goal, as Liverpool show, isn't necessarily going to be enough if it comes too early either. But it would be lovely to have created as many chances as we did against Newcastle, but actually put two or three of them away and think this is under control, because that means they play into our hands then. It's not their strength to be behind.
Yeah.
I agree. I don't think Leicester's a given. I don't think...
No, definitely not.
You can say that's an easy 3 points. Not at all. I think they've, like you said, great counter-attack inside. They've got a good pace up front. And like as you said, Jack, you know, Vardy does not give you a second...
No, he doesn't.
...second rest. So, as you said, playing out from the back can be quite tricky. Sometimes you might just need to lump it forward, which is why I think Llorente might be a good option to start.
Quick predictions then for that game?
2-1.
Don't say it.
Maybe this could be the first draw of the season.
Oh, he said it. I'll have to edit that out.
Oh, is that what I wasn't supposed to say?
I think we'll just scrape it. I could see it being another 1-0.
I could quite easily see it. This after 3 games where we have got away with it, this could be the one where maybe we don't, and you know, we're 1-0 down in the 60th minute or something, and we keep smashing at them and don't get anything from it. I don't want it to be the case, but for the sake of balance and parity,
I see what
you're the level headed one of the group.
I see what you mean. Last 3 games, we've kept knocking on the door, we've got a reward, but ultimately you can't keep doing that.
You can't keep. It's great that we have done, because it's a very unspursy thing to have won 3 games in a row from scoring in the 80-plus minute, and sooner or later you do run out of luck. But at the same time, the Fulham game aside, where for the first 45 we were obviously terrible, the other games we've had plenty of chances before we finally did make that breakthrough. And perhaps this is the one where those early ones go in, as opposed to being frustrated.
Yeah, it always felt, and you must know this more than anyone, that those last minute goals just always used to come against us, didn't it?
Yes.
There used to be so many gags about Spurs are sponsored by extra chewing gum for those extra minutes that you need, all stuff like that. It used to be infuriating.
Well, we went through a phase of conceding late goals this season in the Champions League. You look at the Inter game, you look at the PSV game.
Oh, PSV was painful.
We actually conceded in the 89th minute against Barca to make it 4-2. So we have conceded late goals in league. Mm.
I've blocked them out of my memory. That's what it is. It's time now for the We Are Tottenham Hotspur quiz.
We are about the glory of the game. We are about playing with style. We are Tottenham Hotspur.
So for anyone that's not done this, I'll give you a game. I'll give you the date of that game.
All
right. I'll name half of the Spurs lineup, and then between you, you've got to try and figure out the rest of the team that started that game. So this match is Tottenham 1, Leicester 1. It's the 29th of October 2016. So it's not too long ago.
Exactly.
I honestly have no recollection of this game whatsoever. We played 4-2-3-1 formation.
Yeah.
So we had Hugo in goal. Okay. Right back was Kyle Walker. Left back was Danny Rose. One of the centre backs was Jan Vertonghen. The other centre back's a question mark. Centre midfielders, Dembele and a question mark. Right hand side of midfield was Ericsson.
Oh dear.
Number 10 position to question mark.
Oh dear.
Left hand side Sun. And centre forward to question mark. That's 2016, so it's not too long ago. Yeah.
And I finished 1-1?
Yeah. I finished 1-1 that game.
Jansen scored a penalty.
Oh, he remembers it. I was there. Jansen up front.
And because then they scored, it was someone like Musa scored there.
He's nailed it.
Scored in about the 47th minute because we missed the goal as well because we didn't
Musa,
get back to us.
Musa in the 48th minute and Jansen in the 44th in that game. So you've got Jansen up top. So you need the other centre back that was playing alongside Jan.
Dyer
was at centre back. Mate, that's a great guess. I thought that one might have caught you out.
That's a tough one.
That's a good one. So then you just centre midfielder and then your number 10.
Wanyama next to Dembele.
Wanyama was next to them. I wish you'd get Gav on every week for this. Unbelievable. And then you just need your attacking midfielder that was playing behind Jansen that day.
I don't think it was... Oh, dear. It's going to be someone random, isn't it? I don't know why I'm...
2016, this is.
It was the unbeaten home season. It seems like a long time
and they
ago.
Were, they were, I think, the two teams got draws that
season.
Yeah,
and Liverpool.
And Leicester
we won
them.
Every other home game after yeah. this.
He's in the current squad, this player.
Lamella?
It's not Lamella. I'll be honest with you, I'm surprised this one is the one that's stumping you.
Because it was when Kane was injured, wasn't it?
Yes, yeah, Kane was injured yeah. for this game, which is why Janssen played and got the pen. I mean, he without giving it away, he's quite a big player for us still now. This is a real like brain. Do you want the answer?
Brain dead.
It's not Delhi then.
Dele Alli. There we go.
It seemed a bit obvious.
So that side that day was Lloris in goal, Walker, Dyer, Vertonghen and Rose. Back four. Wanyama and Dembele centre midfield, Eriksen, Ali, Son and Janssen. Harry Winks come on in that game, as did George, Kevin and Kudu.
God, that team has not changed much, has it?
And then, well, this was the bench. So Vaughan was in goal. And there was Nkudu, Trippier, Onoma, Winks, Davis and Carter Vickers.
Not one.
So we talk about squad depth, though. I mean, there's not a lot on that bench that was really ever going to come on and change the game. Whereas now, we've got a lot more than that.
What's your take on Onoma? Do you reckon he has a future at Spurs?
I don't know. I mean, he hasn't played a lot in the loan spells he's gone out in the Championship in. He started brilliantly at Villa and they were going mad about him, but then all of a sudden he found himself out of the team. I'm not sure. It's just a case of, you know, if he did come back,
I reckon it would. But you look at games, you look at squad depth, and I feel like games in like the League Cup or the FA Cup could be games for him to make a case for himself.
Yeah, it's a difficult one. I mean, we seem to forget he's still a young man. He's only 21.
Yeah.
Like, you sometimes, I think of him as being one of those older youngsters. I know that sounds weird, but like, he's 21.
Like Jesse Lingard.
Yeah, he's about 28.
Yeah, that's it.
Interesting point about using players like that in the cup games, though, because going, you know, circling right back to what we were saying at the top of the show, is that if you rotate your squad and you take the opportunity of those games to blood new guys and to gather them experience. Mm. And then they lose, then everyone gets criticised, from the management right down to the players. If they win games, then you think, brilliant. But as soon as you get to a point where you get more serious about winning the trophy, then people get a little bit itchy about whether they should be in there and you should be prioritising the trophy. And at the same time, if you are going to prioritise trophies and cups, it means playing a strong side, which means these guys really aren't going to get much of a go, because Tottenham, for as strong as they are, we don't get many gimmies. It's not the same as a Man City, who can start a team with eight changes in a league game on a Wednesday night but still have enough big guns on the bench to make a change with 20 minutes to go if it's not going their way. So it's a really difficult thing, and I'm not saying I've got an answer to it. I'm just saying it's another reason why we should really be grateful for what the job that's being done by the management already to keep us as competitive in these competitions.
I often think as well that Championship loans to certain players can be a bit of a hindrance. Like, I look at Onoma, he's quite an attack minded midfielder, isn't he? He wants to go forward when he gets where he wants to take risks. From the few games I've seen him play for Spurs, that's what he's done. And he went to Aston Villa, he did okay, 33 games, 4 goals. He's at Sheffield Wednesday now. But a player like that, as soon as you've got a tough away game in the Championship, he's probably the one that the managers look at and think, I'll sacrifice him today and I'll put in my other defensive midfield and I'll pad it out. So for players of a certain style, I sometimes think Championship football's not a great move. You look at, there's all of a sudden a lot of German clubs are taking an interest in young English players, and I feel like moving out there and playing top flight football, which is the kind of football that Onoma needs to be playing. Like, a lot of games in the Championship, whether or not, I don't know whether or not people watch them a lot, but they're not great games most of the time. They're experienced players kicking lumps out of each other for a majority of the game. It's very physical. There's not a lot of football being played. So I would always question how much someone like Onoma is necessarily going to develop going to Sheffield Wednesday on loan. I'm not sure. Poch has obviously looked at it and thinks he's going to learn more doing that, because some of the other youngsters, he says, well, no, I don't want to loan them out, I'll just have them with me,
yeah,
and they'll train Monday to Friday with me and they'll learn more that way. So it's a difficult one. I feel like he's one that would benefit a lot more from going to a Prem side, but whether or not there is a Prem side that would want to take him,
well,
is another question.
Would have thought Nkuda would have benefited from a Prem side.
He's got an unbelievable agent that has somehow, off the back of coming on against Fulham and that dreadful performance against Chelsea, has nicked him a loan move to Monaco. Fair play to his agent. And it's not for me in Kudu. We made a few of those weird signings of these wingers and it just hasn't worked. But anyway.
But sometimes you need injury, weirdly, you need injuries in your squad for people to get a chance and get bedded in.
Definitely.
Because if you look at this team, the one that we've just been through from the Leicester game in 2016, now, where is Harry Winks actually getting in that team if all these players are fit? And then all he needs is a couple of injuries, he gets a bit of a run, he played in the game against West Ham probably a couple of weeks,
yep,
after this one, and then all of a sudden he's much more in the front of the manager's thoughts, mm, and in the fans' thoughts as well, and now all of a sudden he's an England international and he is a strong part,
yeah,
of the team,
yeah.
And it's the same, you could even say Harry Kane on an even greater level when we talk about where we give younger players an opportunity. In a previous life, when Spurs were finishing 5th and 6th and playing in the Europa League, that was deemed the opportunity, mm, for some of these players to get,
yeah,
a go. And if it wasn't for his performances in that competition, Harry Kane wouldn't, mm, be the player that he is.
And
now,
Dele Alli to some extent as well, because we signed him with no expectation, then all of a sudden we had loads of midfield injuries. He was thrown in, started,
yeah,
scoring goals, and you think, well, actually, I can't leave this guy out, and look at him now.
But he's somebody who also benefited from a season long or 6 month loan or whatever it is.
In the lower leagues.
Lower division,
yeah,
club, yeah,
yeah.
Well, we signed him and loaned him back, did we not?
Straight away,
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And yeah, look what he's gone on to achieve. So there we go. But another big week ahead for us. I mean, if we can pick up another victory in the league, I mean, the pressure would be really on the other side of the top.
We've also got a nice little break. So it's not Sunday midweek.
Yeah.
So we've got enough time for you'd hope the players to be fully refreshed. You'd hope that, you know, I think Poch said he'd give him a couple of days off.
Yeah.
So to yesterday and today as days off, which is quite nice. So they'll have a bit of, you know, they'll come back refreshed, re-energised, hopefully fully motivated.
Hopefully Harry will be back soon as well, won't he?
Yeah, so
hopefully.
He's been warm weather training.
Looking strong as well. Like, I mean, you know, you're never really sure what the state is from those videos, but to be posting them, you like to think he's doing well, otherwise he wouldn't be
doing
that.
I think he'll be back for Arsenal.
Or Dortmund, maybe.
Quite
first
week.
Maybe.
Not
what's that
team.
About?
First
two,
week, that's
two,
next
two
week,
weeks ago.
That's
next
week.
Yeah.
And have Chelsea got Man City this week? Just thinking about who's going to take points off each other.
Maybe we don't rush him back. We'll see. Stato, need to give him a little mention.
Yes.
So had an amazing day by the sounds of it at Newcastle, taking his son for the first time. So he sent in some audio clips, which I'm going to drop on the end of this, just as a little. So he previewed the game, did one at half time, did one after the game. So it sounded like they had an amazing day, and the late winner as well must have just topped it off. So it was fantastic. Listening to that stuff that you did, Stato. So enjoy that, everyone. Gareth, great to have you back on. Let's not leave it 18 months again.
Try not to.
Abbas, good to see you as always, mate. And remember, whatever happens this week, the future's bright, the future's lily white. Come on, you Spurs.
So, a fortnight ago, my six-year-old son, John, asked if he could come to a Tottenham game with me. This is something I've been waiting for my whole life, not just since John was born, but since I was old enough to think about having children, when I could introduce them to Tottenham and take them along. So I was giddy with pride myself, and I was probably looking forward to it just as much as John was. So throughout the course of the day, I asked him some questions and recorded it for the pod. So here you are. Hello, this is Stato and I'm at Wembley, and today I'm joined by
John Ruckel.
John, why is today a very special day for you?
My first football match, Tottenham v Newcastle.
Are you excited?
Yes, very.
And which of the Spurs players are you really looking forward to seeing today?
Son. Heung-min Son.
Oh, excellent. What's your prediction for the game today?
2-0.
Oh, I think 2-1 to Tottenham as well. But I think we're going to have a fantastic day. And come on, you Spurs.
Come on, you Spurs.
So it's half time and it's goalless. John, what were your thoughts of the first half?
Very good. I thought that there would be at least one goal.
And what, you got very excited when we hit the post. Did you think we'd scored?
Yes.
It was really a shame it wasn't, was it?
Yes.
But you think Spurs are in control?
Yes.
Oh, we've got to be careful because Newcastle are a bit of a threat, aren't they?
Yeah.
So as long as everyone keeps working hard, we should win.
Yeah.
Come on, you Spurs.
Spurs.
So Spurs have won by 1-0 with a goal from Heung-Min Son on the 82nd minute. John, tell me about your first experience at Tottenham.
Very exciting. I thought we could have done a bit better, at least 2 goals
yeah.
from Tottenham.
But you think we did? Newcastle did very well to try and shut us out, didn't they?
Yes, they really did. I expected them. I didn't really expect them to do that.
Okay. And they tried to score as well and nearly did a couple of times, didn't they?
Yes, they really did.
Both teams
did.
Hit the woodwork.
Mm-hmm.
And we've enjoyed it. We stayed after the final whistle for a little bit, didn't we? You ran up and down all excited.
Yeah, I did.
And lots of people really came up and shook your hand because a few people heard it was your first game, didn't they?
Yeah.
But overall, you've really enjoyed the day, have you?
Yeah, I really, really have.
And you want to come again?
Yeah, I really do.
Forever and ever. Yeah, well, that's great news. Anything you want to say finally?
Not really. Spurs. Come on, you Spurs!
Hey, well done.
I always thought there was very, very many people interested in football, and I always thought that football was a very important game, but I never realised until today just how important it is.
Whether the Wonder Boys of White Hart Lane are or are not the team of the century can't possibly be more than a matter of opinion.
Well, they're the finest team in Great Britain, and one of the best in the world.
We are about the glory of the game. We are about playing with style. We are Tottenham Hotspur. The curve of the ball, the billow of the net, the beating of the trap and the picking of the lock, the swiftness of thought, the lightness of touch. We are Ginola, Greaves, Klinsmann. We are the collective gasp, the intake of breath, the flick, the trick, the 30-yard free kick. We are Hoddle, Mabbott and King. We are the lob, the chip, the dummy and the volley. We are the hat trick, the scissor kick. We are Bill Nick. We are the outside of the boot, the inside of the net, and those seconds that last forever.
Van der Vaart to level it up. Raphael van der Vaart, 2-2! It's quite a game, isn't it always?
We are Jennings, Defoe and Perryman. Glory past, glory future. What was, what is, what's next? We are Blanchflower, Ardiles, and Bale. We are about winning with a flourish. We are about winning with style. We are about the glory of the game. Daring to try, daring to risk, daring to dream. To dare is to do.